to What's the Mood, where we talk all things mood and mindset, sleep, nutrition, chemical health, and leadership. I'm your host, Julie Berry, from the Illinois Human Performance Project, and we are so glad you're here.
Today on What's the Mood, we have Abby and Courtney from the Prescription Playbook. Abby and Courtney host a segment on the What's the Mood podcast, and we're excited to have them today. Abby is a prevention specialist with a background in applied communication and public advocacy. Abby works under the Statewide Opioid Response, or the SOR grant, and the Prescription Playbook Project. She's been doing this work for 3.5 years. Courtney is a prevention specialist, health education specialist, and health and wellness coach. Courtney obtained her undergraduate degree at the University of Iowa, where she discovered her passion for preventative health care and health promotion. All right. Abby is a prevention specialist with a background in applied communication and public advocacy. Abby works under the Statewide Opioid Response, or the SOR grant, and the Prescription Playbook Project, and has been doing this work for 3.5 years. Courtney is a prevention specialist, health education specialist, and health and wellness coach. Courtney obtained her undergraduate degree at the University of Iowa, where she discovered her passion for preventative health care and health promotion. All right, Abby and Courtney, welcome to What's the Mood?
Hey, Julie.
Hi, thank you for having us.
It's great to have you. So we're going to dive right in. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, sounds great. Let's go.
Okay, so let's talk prescription playbook. What is it? Why is it important?
All right, so I'll jump in here. The Prescription Playbook is an Illinois statewide education and awareness campaign, and it was designed to help prevent prescription pain reliever, opioid, as well as stimulant misuse, abuse, and diversion by adolescent athletes. Through this project, we worked to target 15 counties across the state of Illinois. And really, we're looking to just build connections, build relationships with community members that really allow us to just get a little bit closer to the schools. Our end goal is really to just educate our teachers, the athletic directors, athletic trainers, coaches, parents, really anybody who is working to influence and impact the lives of our adolescent athletes.
Very cool. Courtney, Abby mentioned a little bit about stimulants. What is it and why is it so important, and do we need to be talking about it?
Just a little bit about stimulants and why our adolescents should be aware of them and we need to be talking about them. It's because of just how incredibly accessible stimulants are in today's culture. So for instance, let's take caffeine as an example. So caffeine is a stimulant, and it is also one of the most widely available psychoactive substances in the world today. Now, I'm not telling you to skip your morning cup of coffee or that, you know, drinking coffee in the morning is bad for you, because, you know, it's not. But we do need to be focusing on how much caffeine our adolescents are taking in and just kind of, you know, being a little bit more aware.
That's really helpful. You know, we consume it so much. I don't think we think about that. Like you called caffeine a psychoactive stimulant. It like sets a little bit more perspective when you think about what you're putting into your body. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are in the work of working with adolescents. What is the recommended amount of caffeine that you would say a student or adolescent should consume?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So across the board, I have seen experts recommend that adolescents should consume no more than 100 milligrams of caffeine each day. So 100 milligrams, that kind of looks like 2 cans of Coca-Cola or maybe like 1 cup of your home brewed coffee. And, you know, so 100 milligrams is perfectly safe for our adolescents to be consuming. But we need to be having this conversation because, as I mentioned, you know, stimulants such as caffeine are incredibly accessible. So our adolescents could walk into a grocery store today and purchase an energy drink that contains 300 milligrams of caffeine, potentially putting that adolescent in harm's way.
Yeah, that's helpful information. Abby, can we hear from you a little bit about opioids and what you think people need to know about them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know Courtney touched on stimulants, but we're going to touch a little bit more on opioids, and I'll talk a little bit at the end here about why they're starting to actually connect. But opioids are a class of drugs that essentially interact with the opioid receptors throughout our brain and all across our body. And essentially, when that opioid or that chemical compound attaches to those receptors, it just reduces the signals that our brain is sending to our body that we are in pain. And so in doing so, it really reduces the intensity of pain that one might be feeling. There are different classes of opioids. The different types are natural, semi-synthetic, and synthetic. But really looking at maybe some of the terms that we're more familiar with, they're going to be those prescription opioids as well as the illicit opioids. Why this is important, especially in today's world, we know we lost 107,000 people to opioid overdose last year. So that was in 2021. And unfortunately, that number is growing. A big contributor to that is fentanyl and counterfeit pills. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that's being mostly manufactured in other countries, but it's being brought here into the U.S. It's a very cheap drug. And so unfortunately, people who are using street drugs or selling street drugs are starting to infiltrate fentanyl into all illicitly bought and sold medications. That includes counterfeit pills. And so that's where I think what I would like to really emphasize here is one of the most important things in having conversations with our adolescents is to never, ever purchase a medication on the street. 4 out of 10 pills being confiscated by the DEA right now have a lethal dose of fentanyl. And so that's not just any amount of fentanyl, that's an amount of fentanyl that could actually take one's life. And so having conversations with our adolescents that fentanyl and opioid is being found in things like Xanax and things like stimulants such as Adderall, as well as things like cocaine, another stimulant. And so it's just so important to have conversations right now, really with everybody, but especially with our adolescents who are potentially starting to, you know, have the ideas of wanting to maybe experiment or try new things. But that's something that we really can't risk doing today, because fatal fentanyl is being found in all substances, including those stimulants and opioids, and some of those other ones like Xanax as well.
That those statistics are very sobering to hear. And I was just curious, you mentioned several times the importance of having conversations with your adolescents. Do you have a recommendation to how to go about that? Is it just direct or any suggestions around that?
One of my biggest suggestions is just to have small conversations as often as possible. Mm-hmm. And so one of the main things I hear in our prevention work is just that 160-minute conversation is not impactful as 61-minute conversations. And so, you know, are you, you know, taking your kiddo over to a friend's house for the night and you just take that few minutes in the car to just have a conversation, or, you know, at the dinner table, or when you feel like it's a really safe opportunity to just have a quick conversation with your adolescent, I think it's a good time to do so. We don't want to bombard our adolescents, obviously, like they're still learning and we want them to learn things on their own as well. But if we can equip them with information that can just protect them, and help them make decisions when they get to that point. That's really what we're looking for. Give them some tools in their toolbox so that they can make the best decision to help keep themselves safe.
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. So it's really obvious to me that the two of you are really passionate about your work and what you do. And I'm just curious, like, what are your whys at the end of the day when it's been a rough day or a hard week? What drives you in your passion for this work?
Yeah, so I can get us started with answering that. So you're absolutely right. Sometimes we do have really hard days, and sometimes seeing those statistics of, you know, 107,000 overdoses last year due to opioids, sometimes hearing that can be daunting. And so it is so important that we do have a passion for what we do. And, you know, for me personally, after having a loved one who does have an opioid use disorder and seeing how this disorder has affected him and affected his family and friends, I want to do everything I can and everything in my power to help prevent a family from experiencing the same type of pain. So if that means that I get the privilege of going into a high school to educate students about prescription medication safety and educate them about what opioids and stimulants are, I am going to jump at that chance because, like I said, teaching our adolescents about this will save lives.
So awesome. I'm just going to feed off of your passion there, Courtney. But very similar to what I was saying earlier and a lot of what Courtney was saying as well, but the majority of the lives that we're losing to drug overdose and more specifically opioid overdose, they can be prevented. And so what I really truly believe is that if we can bring awareness to this topic and we can educate, really starting with our adolescents, starting as young as we possibly can, giving them this information, obviously, you know, sharing the information in a way that they can consume is very important. But for me, my passion comes very similarly from Courtney. I have a family member who I lost to opioid overdose. And so what I think could have been prevented is if that person was aware, if they were educated, if they had a prevention specialist like me or Courtney come into their school or come to an event that they were at and share this information with them, I really truly believe that it could have change the trajectory of their life. And so education and awareness to me is the biggest step that we can take in preventing any further overdose.
Your whys are very real and admirable. So thank you for sharing those. You guys have had some hard weeks and hard days, but I also imagine you've had some really life-giving times in your job. And would you share with us just like a highlight, maybe in the last year of when work was just like, that's the best?
Yeah, so I would say that probably my favorite event that Abby and I had the privilege of doing was going to a high school and teaching 5 freshman health classes about prescription medication safety. And this was just so cool to see how invested they were in the topic of conversation. And you could tell just by the questions they were asking and just how engaged they were that they truly found this conversation to be so important, and just kind of seeing them discover new things about prescription medication safety and talk about ways that they are going to start practicing this. It was just really cool to see. And, you know, it, like I said before, if we can get this message to just one person, it is so impactful. And we got to give this message to 5 health classes.
Wow. Awesome.
And I'll say for me, that was definitely a big highlight for us, Courtney. It was a fun day, a long day, but a fun day. And we got to reach so many adolescents that day. But on the opposite side of things, thinking from a community lens, a huge highlight for me, it has been this past year, but one that's always been a highlight for me as I've done this work, is Drug Take Back Day. So the DEA puts on 2 drug take back days every year, 1 in April and 1 in October. This past April, through social media, so through putting messaging out there about safe disposal of prescription medications and just videos and sharing stuff from the DEA, we were able to reach just under 60,000 people via social media. And then in person, we were able to actually go and be at a few drug take back events where we could actually physically see some of that medication being brought in and properly disposed. And in doing so, we could share some of our resources and information with them as well. But just to see community members come and be so thankful that there's a safe way that they can properly dispose their medications and protect their loved ones is definitely a highlight of mine. So any drug take back day is a favorite of mine.
Very cool. So as we wrap up this important conversation, how can listeners learn more about the prescription playbook?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably the best way to learn more about the prescription playbook and some of our free resources is to check out our website at ilhpp.org/prescription playbook. And, you know, like I said, we will have a list of our free resources there. And then also follow us on our social media sites. So we are on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And this is a great way just to hear about what we might be doing in your community and what events you could come out to and help support us. So I just want to thank, you know, Julie and What's the Mood podcast for inviting us here to share a little bit about the prescription playbook. And, you know, for everybody who is listening, keep an eye out for another segment of Playing It Safe with the Prescription Playbook coming up in the next few months.
Absolutely. We look forward to those podcasts coming up in the next couple months. And just want to encourage you to keep on doing the very important needed work in our country. Appreciate you guys being here and cheering you on all the way. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.